One of my Facebook friends said us this week was post-Christmas blues. After all the holidays and the celebrations of the past 6 weeks, in some ways, the letdown is inevitable. There have been the feast at Thanksgiving and the Christmas parties and the New Year's Eve parties. But now, we're taking down the lights and the trees. School begins again this week for many people. I'm one of them. There's no more four-day work weeks coming ahead. So you might be wondering, why are we reading this text now? It's John's account of the origins of Christ. With Christmas over, it might seem a little out of place. But one of the great things about this text is it's for more than just Christmas. It takes an all-encompassing view of the event that we celebrate at Christmas, that Jesus Christ, God Himself, was born as a human baby. And John doesn't just leave us with a smiling, happy baby Jesus in the manger, surrounded by some white, fuzzy sheep and smiling cows. John shows us why Christmas matters all year round. Christmas matters because John proclaims to us that the Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. This claim that Jesus was God dwelling, living on the earth, was a problematic statement to John's audience. Each of the four Gospels, the four accounts of Jesus' life and ministry, was written for a specific group of people in a specific situation with specific problems. John was written for Christian Jews who were coming into conflict with the synagogue authorities. Jesus had come to earth as a Jew, a member of God's chosen people. His disciples were Jews and his followers were Jews. And unlike today, when there's very distinct separation between Jews and Christians, in those first years after Christ, Christians worshipped in the synagogue with the Jews. They remained Jews, but they also believed in Jesus. But this led to conflict. About at the end of the first century, the conflict got worse, and the synagogue leaders started to excommunicate those that they thought were heretics. They kicked them out of the synagogue, out of their way of life. And they were caught in this conflict for the precise claim that John makes in this passage, that Jesus is God, God walking the earth. This opening passage of John 1 that we read is considered the prologue to John's gospel. It was a little unusual for literature at the day to have a prologue, but it sets up many of the themes that come back as you read through the rest of the book of John. Themes like the excellency of Christ, conflict between light and darkness, John the Baptist, Jesus and his work and his rejection. Many scholars think that parts of this were probably hymns before John wrote this, and John took these familiar phrases and wove them into this new prologue. In the new form, John sets the stage by starting at the beginning. Before the world was even created, the opening of the gospel, in the beginning, echoes the very first words of the Bible in Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. John says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John starts with the grandest view available. From eternity, the Word has existed with God and was in fact God. Then he writes about John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus. The Word comes into the world. The Word becomes flesh. He takes on a body and becomes human. John concludes the prologue by saying that Jesus is the fullness, the fulfillment of the law that God gave through Moses. To his persecuted audience, John declared that Jesus was eternal God living among them, that Jesus was 100% God and 100% human. This belief that God took on flesh was the problem. It was getting them kicked out of the synagogues and turning their lives upside down. Believing that Jesus is God dwelling on earth can still turn our lives upside down today. Jesus no longer walks the earth in physical form. Without his physical presence on earth, it's often hard to experience, to feel Jesus dwelling with us. I think one of the most dramatic examples I've ever heard of not feeling Jesus' presence is Mother Teresa. The world knew her as this great nun who left her family in Albania and moved to India. And while she was there, God called her to start a new ministry to the sick, the dying of Calcutta. She went, and those that went with her, where no one else dared to go. They lived in poverty with the people they were serving. She was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979, and the world looked on in amazement at her life and her work. And I was very pleased this week to hear that the U.S. Postal Service is issuing a stamp this year commemorating her. Very convenient. But 10 years after her death, the world was shocked to hear about Mother Teresa's spiritual life, that Mother Teresa suffered a dark night of the soul for the last 50 years of her life. The 50 years she lived in poverty, cared for the dying, and blessed the world by her example. During those years, she did not feel Jesus' presence with her. She felt lost and abandoned. In one letter she wrote, "Lord, my God, who am I that you should forsake me, the child of your love, and now become as the most hated one? I call, I cling, I want, and there is no one to answer. No one on whom I can cling. No, no one. Alone. There is nothing but emptiness and darkness. My God, how painful is this unknown pain? I have no faith, and I dare not utter the words and thoughts that crowd my head and make me suffer untold agony." Mother Teresa's untold agony came from lacking the feeling of Jesus' presence, of the sense that he was not dwelling with her. Most of us will not experience such deep agony for so many years. But all of us have occasions to cry out with the psalmist, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Times when Jesus doesn't seem to be dwelling with us. Perhaps it's months of unemployment and job searching, submitting resume after resume, only to be rejected again and again, wondering how you're going to make the ends meet. Or perhaps it's the miscarriage of a much-hoped-for child, the feeling that a dream is shattered on the floor in millions and millions of pieces, fear that another pregnancy might lead to the same result. Or perhaps you feel burned out from the stress of your job or from being involved in every activity at church or caring for small children. You feel tired, dry, and empty. And these and hundreds of other situations, we, along with Mother Teresa, feel spiritually dead. We feel there's no one to answer our pleas for help. Jesus is not dwelling with us. Darkness surrounds us. But in the darkness, John 1 reverberates in our ears. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." John declares that Jesus was God, walking on earth, revealing his glory. The word that's translated "dwell" in this passage is kind of an unusual word. It only occurs a few times in the Bible. And it literally means either to take up residence or to camp or live in a tent. Most English translations use "dwell" to translate it, but I looked at a few others, and a few say the word took up residence among us, or he lived among us. He made his home with us. The Message says the word moved into the neighborhood. John emphasizes the word's presence on earth. He didn't pass through in a whirlwind weekend trip and then leave. And he didn't live like an angel hovering above the ground and then getting all glowy after he healed someone. The Word, who was with God and was God from the very beginning, took on flesh. He had a human body and mind. He was hungry, thirsty, and tired. He celebrated at weddings and cried at funerals. Jesus was somewhat like a missionary who moves to another country and takes on a new lifestyle. I have friends, Troy and Faith, that moved to Bangladesh about 2 years ago as missionaries. They're learning the Bangla language. In all of her pictures, it's always fun to see. She's not wearing jeans and sweaters, but she's wearing brightly colored saris. Their son was born in a hospital in Bangladesh and hasn't been back to the U.S. yet. With each passing day, they become more and more accustomed to living life the way people in Bangladesh do. When they come back to visit the U.S. this summer, I'm sure that they will realize just how Bangladeshi they have become. This is, of course, an imperfect example of what Jesus did. He took on his humanity all at once, and he remained 100% God, 100% human. But like Troy and Faith, he moved into a new neighborhood, and he lived by new social norms. This unusual word for dwell also recalls the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, God's glory dwelled in a tent, the tabernacle. God was present in the midst of his people, in the tabernacle. His presence dwelt in the Holy of Holies, in the very center of the tabernacle, and then later in the temple. Now, John says, that the Word made flesh, and in the Word made flesh, we have seen his glory. In Jesus, we see the glory, the presence of God. He is no longer bound to the tabernacle, but took on flesh and walked the earth. The glory of God, the Word became flesh, moved into the neighborhood. John also tells us how Jesus came from the Father and moved into the neighborhood. He came full of grace and truth, and scholars think that this too is an allusion to the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, there's two nouns that often occur together: steadfast love, and one that's translated sometimes faithfulness, sometimes truth. In Exodus 34, God uses these words to describe himself. He tells Moses he is the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. This God became flesh. Jesus came to earth full of grace and truth, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Jesus was God of grace and truth, dwelling on earth, revealing his glory, the glory of the one and only. 2,000 years ago, Jesus walked the earth, acting in truth and grace. He healed the sick. He fed the hungry. He taught the crowds. He died on a cross and was raised back to life. The disciples could see with their own eyes how the Word had become flesh. Unfortunately, we don't have it so easy. Jesus no longer walks the earth with us in the flesh. We can't see his body here with us. We can't touch his nail-scarred hands like Thomas did or share a meal with him. We don't even know what he looks like. But God still dwells with us and reveals his glory through Jesus Christ. In John 16, shortly before his death, Jesus tells his disciples he's leaving, but he will send the Spirit to them. God dwells with us through the Spirit today. As we read the Bible, and sometimes there's words that seem to jump off the page, perfect for our situation, the Spirit speaks to us. And Jesus dwells with us. The Spirit provides wisdom and guidance as we make decisions. And Jesus dwells with us. Jesus also dwells with us through the actions of others. As God forms us to be more and more like his Son, our actions represent Jesus to others. Mother Teresa's life represented Jesus to others, even as she herself suffered. I looked at the Mother Teresa of Calcutta website and read some of the things that people said about her. One woman who was cared for as an infant, my Mother Teresa said, "She changed me. She dressed me. She fed me. She took care of me until I was 14 months old. I think of her as my mother and will always think of her that way." Another girl said, "I knew no other mother but her." A Muslim resident in one of the homes that Mother Teresa started said, "All my life I've been begging. Then one day, the sisters picked me up from the roads. Mother Teresa made me feel like a human being for the very first time. Mother Teresa's life brought grace and truth to the slums of Calcutta. In her actions, God showed his steadfast love and faithfulness. We won't all become as famous as Mother Teresa, and we aren't all called to the extreme ministry that she had. But God works through us as well. Jesus dwells with the world through us. Jesus dwelled with the unemployed person being given a Meijer gift card to help make ends meet. Jesus dwells with a couple who suffered a miscarriage through friends with shoulders to cry on, friends who don't try to make everything better, but allow for the pain, tears, and grief. Jesus dwells with a burnt-out young mother through a friend who offers to babysit her kids while she and her husband go out on a date. The Word became flesh to reconcile sinful humanity to God. We who have been forgiven now have the opportunity to become Jesus to others, to allow Jesus to dwell with those we come into contact with through our words and our actions. Jesus dwells with your spouse when you treat them as the image bearer of God that they are. Jesus dwells with your coworker when you take the time to listen to their struggles. Jesus dwells with your roommate when you do the grocery shopping you both hate to do so they don't have to. Jesus dwells with the families that attend around the table at Coit Elementary through a warm meal and loving conversations. Jesus will dwell with the teachers and the students in Rehoboth, New Mexico this week as the team from MCC leads chapels for them. The Word became a human being. He made his home with us. This is both the scandal and the glory of Christmas. And it's the reason that Christmas matters all year round. As we enter a new year and a new decade of 2010, know that Jesus dwells with you, even in whatever darkness you're facing right now. And as Jesus dwells with you, he also dwells with others through you. Henry Nouwen describes it this way: "This is the great mystery of Christmas that continues to give us comfort and consolation. We are not alone on our journey. The God of love, who gave us life, sent his only Son to be with us at all times and in all places, so that we never have to feel lost in our struggles, but always can trust that he walks with us." Please pray with me.